Okay.
So it's Wednesday, March 4th, and it's our public advisory board meeting for this month. And we start off with community input. So do we have any community input this evening? No? Okay.
So we invited us to speak about the healthy beginning healthy communities. I'm not sure where that is.
I think we do it now. Do it now.
Now?
As soon as Jen. Dennis. Yes.
Yeah. And how much time do we have?
It's okay. Tim,
if they got it.
Leanne's been.
And so just, can I make an announcement that we do have this recorded, and so we need to have just the speakers to introduce themselves and kind of minimize the background noise.
Sounds good. So since I'm on crutches, it might be, if it's okay with you, maybe if I sit and talk, that would be okay. So I don't tip over.
Yeah, sit on the end.
On the end, that would be wonderful. I knew that would happen.
Well, it's not John yet.
Okay, so my name is Karen Krajcik, and this is my husband, John Krajcik. I'm executive director, and we are co-founders of Autism Empowerment. We are a nonprofit that's based in Vancouver, Washington. We co-founded in June of 2011, and we do a variety of things in the community that are dedicated to enriching and empowering the lives of children, teens, adults, and families with autism and Asperger's. But we also do a lot of cross-disability work, and one of the things we're going to be talking to you about today is an initiative called Healthy Beginnings, Healthy Communities. We were selected as part of a community to receive a grant from the Northwest Health Foundation to help promote healthy beginnings throughout the Southwest Washington area. And so the packet that we gave you, we're just going to go over just a little bit about the background behind that and also our relationship with Northwest Health Foundation. And our goal here is just to let you kind of know about what we're doing, because we want to be able to partner with you to help strengthen the community for individuals with disabilities in Southwest Washington. And also to invite you at the end to our annual Easter egg hunt for acceptance of all abilities. This will be our fourth one this year. And for those who have not been, it is a cross-disability egg hunt and resource fair that last year served about 1,400 people and had about 40 cross-disability organizations and service providers in attendance. And we had some legislators. Darla was our VIP liaison in terms of that area. And the idea really is to promote acceptance and inclusion throughout our community. And that's really a lot about what Autism Empowerment's about. Even though we do specialize in serving families and individuals on the spectrum, we really believe in inclusion and cross-disability work. And what sets our organization apart from a lot of different types of organizations in the autism world is that everybody on our board of directors and in key roles is either on the autism spectrum or they're really closely related to someone who is. And we believe in the work that we do that it's imperative to be able to include self-advocates in the conversation in every stage of development for program service, events, and so forth. So in our cross-disability work, that's very important to us as well. One of the reasons that we were selected to receive a grant from Northwest Health Foundation is because of our policy of actively including individuals with disabilities on our board and in our programs and in our decision-making. And in fact, we have our first intern who's on the spectrum who's starting, going to be starting with us tomorrow. And it's really kind of neat. So as far as this particular initiative goes, I'll just kind of go through the slides really quickly. John, did you want to say anything? Okay. So the vision that we work for is an inclusive society that accepts and respects all youth and adults on the autism spectrum. Actually, on the human spectrum is how we like to call it. On the human spectrum, basically. And empowers everyone to reach their highest potential. And we think that that can be done through strength and community building. A lot of times, it's really promoting an atmosphere of acceptance and inclusion and involving people in work that just, where we're kind to one another, where we enrich one another, and where we build upon each other's strengths and we help each other where we have challenges. So our pillars of our organization are accept, enrich, inspire, and empower. And we strongly believe that everybody has gifts to give. And so what we like doing in the community is working with people, finding what strengths they have, what gifts they want to give, and then empowering them to be able to work on those projects and to do those things. An example of one of those things is actually Leanne, a referral that had come from you, was a young lady who is a sister to a brother who's on the autism spectrum, and she wanted to put together an autism acceptance event in the high schools in our local community because she felt that teens were not necessarily as accepting as she wanted them to be for kids with disabilities. And so that's an event where she came to us and we're working with her to help support doing those types of things in the community. And that's kind of what we're about, is we're not going to come create the solutions for people, but we're going to work together with you to try to help basically bring up the community as a whole.
So what she's doing for the, she's at Evergreen High School, but it's actually now spread to Mountain View High School. So there's actually two high schools that are jointly doing this together, and they're trying to get Union and some of the other schools, campus involved as well. Next year, they're looking to have all of the schools within Vancouver take part in this event, which is an acceptance event within the schools for the month of March and April, kind of giving it acceptance for, you know, give the April is Autism Acceptance Month. It makes kind of sense to tie that all together.
And we believe very strongly that the youth in our community should have a voice, and that they're working a lot of times with our sons and daughters and their sisters and brothers. And, you know, when they're being included in the conversation, it's very important and it's very impactful. And so one of the things that they're doing is they're doing little social media blurbs where it'll say hashtag autism empowerment or hashtag acceptance for all. And they're going to be doing videos that are going to show on their morning announcements in their school. So everybody in their high school will have an opportunity to be able to hear somebody that's on the spectrum talk a little bit about who they are and what they want in terms of acceptance. And those big types of things are going to be going on throughout the month of April. And we hope that by helping to give a platform and to empowering people to step up and do things like this, that the message will spread and that it'll go through from high schools, middle schools, elementary school, preschool, senior centers, everywhere. We believe in the acceptance for all includes everyone. So
real briefly, we'll go over the next few things and then talk about the initiative.
Okay, so just really, really briefly, in here we have some pictures of a little bit about who we are and what we do. We have an autism empowerment radio program that promotes self-advocacy. And a number of people in this room have actually been on the program. What?
What's the channel?
So we have our own podcast, and you can download it through iTunes or through Blog Talk Radio. And we are also, there are about 135 shows that are on demand. And actually, our intern who's coming in is going to be recording. He's interested in voiceover work, so he's going to be recording a commercial for all our past programs, and then we're going to be replaying them all again and freshening them up. So we can get you information about that. And one of the other things we're going to build on is YouTube as well, and going out into our community and being able to take videos with different people and short blurbs so that we can really get people's personal message out, not just my message, John's message, everyone's message that they'd like to share. So that's kind of a part of what we do as well. This was, as far as the Healthy Beginnings, Healthy Communities initiative goes, that is a collaboration that is among a variety of different organizations within our community. Darla Help is going to be joining us. Next week we are going to Oregon and Kaneda Lodge, and there's going to be 25 other communities there that have been selected from around Oregon and Southwest Washington. And we're going to be talking about early life and leadership building and policy and advocacy, and the idea of bringing how can we make change for the long term within our communities. And what does that look like? And what do we need? And so between now and the end of the year, we're having monthly conversations with different organizations and self-advocates and people. And Mike's been at our meeting, and Mary, you've been at one of our meetings as well. And what we're trying to do is really get a feel for what our community wants and needs to be able to thrive from pre-birth. And we realize that even though this is early beginnings through high school, that really it's important to carry on into employment, into housing and living, well beyond high school. So even though it's early life, it's really the spectrum of life. And so we just wanted to be able to let you know about what we're doing, because we want to be able to engage you in conversation with us, and to maybe, you know, to help out in some way or form, to know that we're trying to do a bunch of different positive things to really get a good feel for our community, but we realize that we may not have all of that information that you have, that you've had in your careers and in working together throughout the years. So we, with your permission, would like to maybe send you a survey and just kind of get some background information from you, so that when we go and we have these meetings, we have a richer base of information to pull from. And so I apologize if I'm kind of rambling and all over the place. My heart's like beating so fast right now. But I just really want to express gratitude and humbly thank you, because without people like you supporting us in the community, well, it inspires us to be able to do more. And in that respect, then we can hopefully in some way, shape, or form inspire others. And so just knowing that you have these meetings, and knowing that you come together, and knowing that you're working to strengthen our disabilities community, that is really motivating for us. And so we wanted to thank you for that. And just really, really briefly, John, if you didn't already hand it out, we're looking for volunteers for our Easter egg hunt for acceptance of all abilities.
This year we
get a cool t-shirt. It'll be purple this year. And we're going to be doing all sorts of videos. There's going to be a lot of legislators there. So if there's anything that you guys have on the agenda that you're trying to kind of like
and right now we have,
promote, there's we actually, a good opportunity to connect with people.
We have 48 agencies already on board this year. Wow. And that's with four more weeks to go. Our goal is to have 60 cross disability organizations. So
tell me what happens at the end of this planning grant.
Okay, so out of the 25 communities that were selected, 8 to 10 will receive a 5-year grant, $50,000 to $150,000 a year for 5 years, to be working on long-term healthy beginnings, strengthening. And what that would entail is building capacity, working on programs and initiatives that help with early life, working on leadership development. And so as one of the 25 communities, we already have a really decent shot at being able to potentially work together and get the next grant. And what else strengthens that is that we're the only disabilities-related community that received the grant, and that's one of their three equity priorities. And also, geography is an equity priority, and we're one of three Southwest Washington communities that got one. So we're really, really hoping for support to be able to try to get to that next level, because that could really put some good money and some good strength within our community for the long term. So,
do you need a letter of support from our board?
At the time of the grant application, that would be wonderful, yes. And that we're going to have a couple meetings with Northwest Health Foundation between now and the application time, but that will probably be around September to October when they're going to be taking the grants. And we were actually one of three of their 25 communities that was asked to be part of their opening presentation to be able to explain. They're very, very interested in learning more about disabilities communities and disability culture in general. And I think that that's, you know, that's something that's near and dear to our hearts. And being as authentic as possible, letting them down. And so we hope that more funders in general will get on board with wanting to help support disabilities communities, because we realize that the solutions need to come from a wide, broad range of different places.
And part of what's going to be coming out of this as well is a website called SWADA, or Southwest Washington Disability Alliance, where it's going to be a conglomeration of nonprofits, it's going to be government agencies, where it'll be a portal for people to access information directly for our community. So there's a lot of positive things coming for our community. And again, with the help of the ARC of Southwest Washington and the Parent to Parent Coalition and Marietta County, we think we have collaborating together. We strongly believe in that. So
we have some amazing people,
yes,
that are in this room that have had many combined years of working to strengthen the community, and we just want to help supplement and do whatever we can to help support that. So.
April 4th.
The day before Easter.
So
we are actually having a stuffing party on March 21st.
How many eggs do you need?
14,000.
So this year.
That's a lot of stuff.
It's a lot of stuff.
It's a lot of plastic chickens.
A lot of plastic chickens working overtime.
I don't know if I can send this out because I work in a public school, but I work in a middle school in Camas. We have a peer buddies program.
Oh, great.
So I could at least vicariously disseminate
this
information.
That would be wonderful. Funnies or something. We're really.
Do I want
Galen Mills from ECC, Early Childhood Center. She usually sends it out to all of their kids in their three centers.
Sometimes we get it out through you might be able to.
If I can get an electronic copy, I'll run it through a couple.
If you get me an electronic copy, I will send it out tomorrow to all the board and DDA.
They're going to be actually out at the events as well. DDA.
Okay, so they already have
that. Well, they're not good.
But we are definitely looking for other volunteers. They may not have that form.
But I mean, I can get it to Susan easily, and Vancouver School District, who isn't here, a friend of mine there.
And one thing we are really recruiting for is buddies, which is if you participate in like New York League or Top Soccer or Peer Buddies, like inclusive buddies that will go around with the kids.
And just be their friend for the day and just be their ambassador for friendship.
And when I say kid, I mean kids of all ages, because I think our oldest day hunter last year was 75. So we've got the young and yummy part for everyone. Didn't mean to take up all your
notes. No, no. So you will have to remind us about a letter.
Yes.
So that there's enough time to write it. So give us a heads up when you meet.
Okay. What kind of lead time? A couple months or a month? Or?
Couple of plenty.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you do 2 months, we got it. And I know that now you'll do 2 months. Well,
she'll do
I know about you.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. And did you bring out our business cards? Okay, we'll leave our business cards in the back, and if you have any questions about anything, please feel free to contact us.
I suppose if you send a blurb on the podcast thing too, we can send it out with the next DDA email mailing.
Okay.
So that there's a little, so that people know how to access it.
Absolutely.
On to special orders then, and Mr. Piper.
Would you like me up the front here? No.
Sure. The microphone, you should be able to hear you.
Of course. Well, it's good to see you all here. I'm Michael Piper, the executive director of ARC. So I want to give you an update on where we're at. It's been 2 years since I've been at the ARC, and had I known where I went in, what I know now, I may not have started taking the job.
We're glad you did not.
Yeah. It was seriously hemorrhaging. Two consultant reports that were from professional consultants that had recommended
close the stores. Same things going on in Portland and Clackamas County, Multnomah County. A lot of the ARCs are struggling, quite frankly, and heard that just today the Yakima one is struggling. And so are we, but for a variety of reasons, which I don't need to go into, the good news is we're back. I was able to last week refinance a majority of the debt that the ARC has. It accumulated a lot of debt from a lack of oversight of the board and poor direction from the executive director. And it was allowed to continue to a point where it accumulated about $500,000 in debt. And then a lot of deferred maintenance. So we're back now where we have a balanced budget. We're really solid fiscal standing. We still have some minor debts that we should be able to pay off rather quickly. And then we intend to make some, what I'm spending my time on principally right now is the infrastructure of the organization, making sure that the IT system, I learned yesterday, for example, that it's never even had a firewall on its IT system and under HIPAA and other regulations. Could have been a disaster. But now, because we have a strong budget, we look much better to potential grants, so we're looking for grants to update our IT system. We're looking at our productivity. People have kind of, over time, I'm just going to be perfectly honest with you, thought things were so dismal and down that they were not very productive, and so we're looking to get people fired up again and looking particularly with the adult program on how to fine-tune and get a little better with our best practices. We've had some turnover in staff, and Trish and the county have been really helpful with some technical assistance, so the staff are getting better. But we can do more, and we should do more. So in a way, I'm kind of saying this is the first time I've been able to look forward rather than backwards. I've been trying to reconstruct an organization that was just torn apart over many years. And so it's literally in this last week I can say, where do we go from here? What is the ARC now? And what's kind of emerging for me, it's not written down anywhere, is that rather than the ARC coming out with all these new programs, per se, or reestablishing old programs that once existed, is to act more as an incubator, much in the way that we house the empowerment folks. We want to help other organizations out. There's families that are self-organizing that we can give support to. We don't have to own all these programs. But what we can do is we can provide the backbone, the infrastructure, the IT system, the communication systems, the rooms, the telephones, and technical assistance so that families or others who want to start an organization or form an alliance to help the disability community can get the help that they need. That's not to say, though, we're not starting some new programs. We're in conversation right now with the county on a housing coordinator type of role. That's and thanks to Sandy Silvera, who led a housing group. I've got all your notes, by the way. And having worked in housing for many years for the state of Washington, I'm real familiar with what a difficult task that's going to be with the vacancy rate right now in Clark County of 2% in the rental market. But we believe that if we can match individuals together who have disabilities, that their limited income will support them if we can get the right people together in the right location in the right place. So it's someone who will have to understand both the housing world and the needs of families and young people who want to live independently. And and the personalities and how they might fit or not fit. And there was actually a software program developed up in a program in Seattle, I think you guys looked at, that had an algorithm was much like Match.com.
Somewhat.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sandy said it would come to this.
Right. But it allowed them to sort of screen people and sort people out in a way that they could predict a more better fit for people who might be living together. So we're going to jump right into that soon, I hope. We have one donor in particular just came forward because they saw the good news of the album and offered us $20,000 to start something like Pride up again. We have some money left over from part of a donation that's been sitting in an escrow account for Pride. We're not going to recreate a Pride program, but Darla and I have been talking about creating a very light, Pride Light preschool type program where parents and special people can come in, trainers, maybe two nights a week with families, young families, to provide specialized training for people for 0 to 5. And it won't be called Pride, it'll be called something else. Is that close enough? And to let the community know that we're back, we're holding a big event, a celebration at the Kiggins on April 15th. It's free. 15th. That's free. Huh? Tax day.
Tax day. Is that coincidental?
Yeah. All the returns.
The Kiggins only allows public events on Wednesdays. So we're going to have a short film series around people experiencing intellectual or physical disabilities. And then we're going to give sort of a state of the arc to let people know that we're back and we're strong, we're healthy. And we're going to use it also to recruit new board members. Part of my job in fixing the ARC was getting rid of some of our board members, quite frankly. And we did that. And we also want to increase our membership because it is a membership organization. So,
when is the event going to take place? What time is
it? 6 p.m., 6 to 8. And, you know, they serve wine and beer there now.
Main Street and what? Between Evergreen and...
Is it
8th?
No, it's north of Evergreen.
It's south of 12th and...
Yeah. It's just a half a block north of Evergreen Boulevard.
Yeah.
Somebody quick look at it.
So I think it'll be a fun event.
Oh, it is. It's half a block north of Evergreen.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. Half a block.
And then we're going to be really quite honest that, you know, we've had a tough few years, but we're back, we're strong, and that the community can count on us, and we'll be out serving the community in the way that we'd like to be able to do, and people would like us to do. And then something I've just learned recently, by the way, we have a brand new website, which is all up to date. It's the same domain name, but it's all refreshed. And it's much nicer looking. It's all up and will be.
What is it?
ARC of Southwest Washington. And that's putting the final touches on it, but it's up and live. So we'll have a calendar of events and a lot of other things on there. And one of the surprises, you know, a majority of our resources comes from our collection service. So I've been looking at that. I never knew when I took this job that I'd be in the used clothing business. And competing with Goodwill and a lot of other of these clothing things. And it's like the mob. I mean, it's... when Goodwill called me one week and said, "Hey, what are you doing in our neighborhood?" And I knew it was... There's also a lot of new people who are picking up on the business of salvaged used goods, like Gaia, the green boxes. You may have seen them around town. It's Columbian did an article on them. It's kind of a scam. And so we're trying to, because we rely so much on that, improve our collection and clothing drives and create partnerships with schools where maybe we give a portion of the proceeds to the school for a sports program or for kids, supporting kids in school, and then a portion goes to the ARC, but the bins are located in the school. So we're looking at a lot of different ways to, rather than the standardized call girls that we have, who like to call themselves call girls. They insist on being
call girls.
It's American.
They're the best. I mean, they're the greatest. So we're looking at other ways to increase our resources. And now, because we have a good budget, we look better to prospective grants. So we're going to be doing more grant writing. And but one of the most surprising things I've learned is we've been getting community service workers from, because I used to manage the Department of Corrections. I got on the list for people who had a DUI or driving while suspended or a minor misdemeanor crime. And they can either stay in jail, pay a fine, or both sometime. Or in lieu of that, they're allowed to give community service hours. So I've been getting a bunch of people to come down, free labor, to help out with our landscaping in our warehouse. And the thing that's really blown me away, we have a number of the people that have come down, have completed their hours, sent the letter to corrections saying they're done, everything's finished. They keep coming back. They want to work. This is the first time they've ever felt they've had a job where that had value and that they're doing something that's has worthwhile. So they're going to be profiled in this Columbian article, which will be a front page story on the ticket. They're just special people who've learned about people with disabilities and really appreciate, you know, unloading trucks and unloading bins and doing a lot of heavy lifting for us that normally we would be paying someone to do. It has saved us some money, increased our productivity. So, but it's really it almost makes you cry. I mean, they're there every day from 8 to 5. And then I noticed a couple of them were people who were experiencing disabilities. And so I started asking the Department of Corrections and the Sheriff's Office, who manages the jail. We have a new sheriff, as you know. I talked to Rick Bishop, who's the commander of the jail. And they have people in jail on their jail roster right now who are disabled. And they have people in their corrections probation system who are developmentally disabled. Both agencies have agreed to, in fact, just last week I got 12 people out of jail, and I got people's fines. Some of them had $20,000 of fines because they get $780 a month. There's no way they can pay some of these fees and fines that they've collected, so they keep adding on more and more and more and more. So we've got them raced. And sometimes in exchange for hours.
Have they signed up with PDA?
Don't know.
You mean you can send them to the zoo over there?
Yeah.
Some are good.
So we want to, the sheriff's has agreed to create a screening committee. I was here when we started the mental health court and the drug court and the drug and alcohol court. And I don't think we need a disabilities court. But I think we can screen people better in the correctional system, keep people out of jail. Because it's not, Rick Bishop, who manages the jail, says, you know, it's not benefiting them. It's not a punishment. It's hard to manage someone in jail who has a disability. They don't want them there. So we have a huge opportunity in the criminal justice system to start something, and I don't know what it looks like yet, but working with DSHS and the Sheriff's Office and Corrections, I think we're going to take a big jump at, like, let's get these people out of the system and get them on
a bigger population in jail are those with mental illness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And some of them are, you know, they go up and down, and when they come down, they can do this as well.
Yeah, yeah. So, and the jail, I mean, there are some really bad people out there that need to be in jail. I don't think a lot of the folks that we, at least I got out in the last week, should have been there. So.
I heard this report, I forget where, but I wanted to say thank you again for, you know, saving the Ark. But at that meeting, you said that they were wanting you in Multnomah, and they wanted you over there in Portland as well. Are you going to spend your time here?
They came, Multnomah County and Clackamas County, Ark came to us to ask us if we would take them over. And we thought long and hard about it and said no. That we really needed to focus. It was just when we were getting stabilized and it was tempting, because that's a huge market for used clothing and services, but we decided let's just focus and stay, keep our own ship afloat and try to improve on our services and our stability. So we're back. We're going to be trying to continue to improve our services. We have some work to do and the level of expertise of our adult program, and the county's been helpful in that. So,
are there invitations that are going to go out for the event?
There'll be a front page story in the Columbian, and we're going to go, and we have an email list of people that we'll send out.
Okay.
So it'll be well advertised. So I hope you can join us.
Yeah.
And we got some cute little films and some serious ones. Anyway, thank you for the opportunity, and thank you so much. The county has been just, I don't think we would have made it without you guys. Thank you.
We're glad that you survived. Yeah. Made an Ark in Clark County, and it was, if you remember Grace Gould, she said it was the first in the country, but someone else said it's really the second. Not to put a finer point on it, I wouldn't argue with her.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't want it to go under.
Yeah.
But thank you and the other folks there
at
the
Ark. Well, it's not been easy.
No.
And we have maybe another deal for you.
Okay. All right.
I'll call you tomorrow.
All right. We can talk later about it. But again, I just want to thank you a lot. I really sincerely think that without the county's support and technical assistance, I think we would have made it. So. Thanks.
Carry the water.
Anyway, thanks everyone.
Thanks. So, see, we got a party to go to, you guys.
Yeah. Got a party and an egg hunt?
A party and an egg hunt. Your social calendar is going to be
stuck in my head.
So, two parties in one night. Walt, you have a party for us?
No, not yet.
No bus parties?
It's not a lot of fun on a bus. I mean,
I think you could have a great party on a bus.
You can. What am I saying? What I want to do is pass this around right now, and my presentation will be pretty short, just to kind of give you an idea of what's happening. Is the fact that I was just thinking about when Michael was talking about the Ark and all the challenges and all that, I started reminiscing about how many times when I've asked about transit here during the really tough times, it was kind of like, I felt like I was a real sad sack, or the sky is going to fall and all that kind of stuff. And thankfully, the public agreed to support public transit. And as a result, right now we're about ready to roll out at the March 19th Board of Directors meeting. So this is actually a preview. The board will give us authorization to use some funding that we have. It's called 5310. You know, and in the government, we have to have numbers. It's through MAP 21, which is this particular handout. This kind of gives you the details of what the Federal Transit Administration calls enhanced mobility of seniors and individuals with disabilities. Now you know why we call it 5310. Given a name like that, you can't. So, what... Oops. Next. So, what this kind of addresses is some issues that we have, and as the manager of CVAN, I understand the limitations that CVAN has. And one of the things that CVAN, as an ADA complementary service, provides is we have to mirror fixed route service. We can only operate during the hours that fixed route operates, in the geographical areas where fixed route operates, and within the 3/4 of a mile of fixed route. The reason that's the case is that when the ADA was passed in 1990, the whole concept was we wanted to provide equal access to public transit. At that time, public transit wasn't very equally accessible. And so they came up with a service called ADA Complementary Service. We call it CVAN as a way to at least guarantee equal access for public transit. The problem is that... Will this work better? Nope. Okay.
The mouse?
Yeah, I was using the mouse, but I keep on getting the screen turned off. Is that these challenges seem to come forward. For one thing, for those that live in the rural areas of Clark County that are outside of the CTRAN service and taxation boundary, there's limited transportation options. For example, if you live in Meadow Glade or Hawkinson, my town, Ridgefield, La Center, there's limited transportation options. And so what we did as part of the Accessible Transportation Coalition Initiative, which is a partnership with the county, with Human Services Council, the Area Agency on Aging, Evergreen School District, a variety of different stakeholders came together and said, okay, how can we address these gaps in services? The restriction of late night service. For example, we have a couple of individuals that we take to dialysis later at night, but when they're released from their dialysis treatment, fixed route and CVAN services aren't available. So what they have to do is take a taxi home. It's also pretty complicated. I mean, I know it. I'm a bureaucrat. I've been a bureaucrat now for 30 years. I prefer to call that Johnny Perfect bureaucrat, but I'm a sensitive type of bureaucrat. But for the everyday public, it's pretty complicated. And the fact that, you know, as I look around the room, you're all older than you were last month, and maybe even 10 minutes ago, so the population that needs the service is growing. We're also finding that people with disabilities, when I started in this business in 1979, a lot of people that have disabilities weren't even classified as having disabilities. They weren't even classified as disabled, they were classified as handicapped. But more importantly is we're able as a society to have people live longer and to function and participate in society much more so than ever before. So that means the demand for special needs transportation is growing. It's not limited. And there's insufficient medical and life-sustaining transportation. The example that I had earlier today of a gentleman that lives outside of the service area advocating on behalf of his father that goes to dialysis 3 days a week, and it's outside of CVAN service area, but it's in Clark County. So as a consequence, you know, there's a demand that needs to be made. Okay. So the Federal Transit Administration provides this funding program called 5310 to serve the special needs of transit-dependent populations beyond traditional public transportation services and the ADA complementary service. Basically, what they're saying is, we are going to give you monies to provide additional services beyond what you currently do. And so that's what we're going to be doing with 3 projects starting in April. We're going to be going to the board and asking to fund these 3 projects. Clark County Volunteer Transportation, supported by Catholic Community Services, something that they do now, but enhance that. Work in development of a mobility management system to take some of the confusion out of finding transportation options, whether or not they're C-Van, C-Tran, Golden Chariots, volunteer transportation. The problem is that it's confusing. And then there's a program that the Human Services Council provides called Reserve a Ride that is in conjunction with their Medicaid transportation that are for folks that need that service but don't qualify under the strict guidelines of Medicaid transportation. So what we're going to be doing is working with Catholic Community Services to provide transportation to rural Clark County residents. Part of what we discussed for 3 years now is how does a person in rural Clark County get into our service area? And a lot of times it takes volunteer transportation in order to do it. Somebody that gets in their car, but they're reimbursed for the mileage that they maybe incur. And one of the things that the Volunteer Transportation Project will do is try to increase the number of volunteer drivers, coordinate better with other volunteer programs so that we can have more and more services in the rural areas and beyond our normal span of service. So that, for example, that individual I talked about, the individuals I talked about that have dialysis, that maybe are ambulatory, that get off of dialysis at 1 o'clock in the morning or 12:30 at night, maybe some transportation can be arranged through volunteers to give them a ride home. If they're ambulatory, that could help. That take a little bit of pressure off. Another example that comes to mind is the Special Olympics athletes. If we can get some of the Special Olympic parents, coaches to be involved with volunteer transportation, the problem that we have is right now that we can get some of the participants to the events, to the training, but a lot of times they have to leave early because of our service hours. Or maybe they don't live in our service area and they have to rely upon someone else. If we can get the coaches, the family to work together, maybe they don't provide the volunteer transportation for those individuals, maybe they provide it for some seniors that need to get help to get to meals, a meal site, or to go shopping or grocery shopping. If we can work out that arrangements, we can overcome some of the limitation that C-Tran has and C-Van has and do it fairly simply. So that's one of the things that the Volunteer Transportation Program will do. The other one that we're promoting right now is mobility management. And the hallmark of the mobility management is the establishment. And I gave you copies of their grant proposals that they made to Washington State that we used to evaluate their proposals. What they want to establish is a one-call, one-click resource center. So whether or not you're using a computer or using a telephone, you can call and you can get information. Not only, again, about Human Services Council or Area Agency on Aging Senior Transportation Services or C-Van or C-Tran, but all of them together. They also want to help increase that pool of volunteers as a way to help that to manage mobility in Clark County. And not just one particular form of mobility, but all forms of mobility. Coordinate services and then also work with our travel training program. One of the things that we had a call the other day from a legislative aide asking about services for a disabled customer that lives in our service area. They hadn't contacted us, but contacted their representative and said that I can't get services. So I had our travel trainer, Veronica Marty, contact them. She found out some interesting things. She goes, well, I can't afford to apply for C-Van service. There's no cost to apply for C-Van services. Well, they told me it would cost to apply for C-Van service. No. Oh. The assumptions, the understandings, the miscommunications are out there. The hope is that through mobility management, things can be spoke than if spoke. Things can be communicated to folks more clearly, more directly, and without some of the filters and without some of the hurdles that a person has to get through to reach the end. And the third project is a project that currently exists through Human Services Council called ReserveArrive. And this is only one portion of the whole ReserveArrive program. They're also asking, Human Services Council is for additional funds through the Washington State Consolidated Grant process. They're very likely to get funded for that. This allows them to purchase additional transportation with providers like Golden Chariots, Quad City Cab. They have over 20 different vendors that they contract with to provide Medicaid transportation or medical transportation. And they would expand the grouping of folks that can get those services for life-sustaining medical appointments, possibly to go to transportation to meal sites, senior centers, the VA, shopping and recreational activities. Unlike C-TRAN and C-VAN, we can't prioritize based on trip purpose because of the ADA. With this, they can. And initially, as we're growing this program, we're going to really focus on the unmet need for life-sustaining trips. We're talking oncology. We're talking about services like diabetes management, dialysis, those kind of life-sustaining treatments. If there's additional funds after that, then we'll be looking at some of the additional things. But we also value, we think it's just as important that seniors, people with disabilities, have recreational opportunities, have the ability to learn, to have the ability to go out grocery shopping. I mean, you can have all the medical treatments that you want, but if you can't go to the grocery store, guess what? You're going to get real thin, and eventually you're going to have another medical treatment. So these are the three projects that we're going to fund this current biennium, 2015 and 2016. Our hope is that by using the $5,310, we'll be able to expand what we can do beyond the traditional approach, which is, pardon the phrase, butts on buses, okay? And try to take it to a more creative way of doing it. One of the things that I would always say to any of you that are driving is that the Catholic Community Services and Human Services Council would love to have more volunteer drivers. And that's what we're going to really try to promote, because I think that the days of saying, let's let the government do it, a.k.a. C-TRAN do it, are gone. Michael knows this. Anybody that's been in social service knows this, is that the days of relying upon traditional government programs are going away. And it doesn't have to be pull it up by your bootstraps, because I'm wearing tennis shoes. But it means that we all have to be involved. And that's the whole point of the 5310, is get the community involved to solve the problem and not say, you solve the problem for us. So that's the great news I have. And so now I'm open to questions. Anything I can do to try to answer some concerns or questions or confusion, because I'm very good at making people confused.
Well, what's going to be the timing?
We hope that the board will agree with our staff reports on March 19th, and the programs will start April 1st.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's
great. Well, are there special requirements in terms of extra insurance for volunteers that are bus drivers?
That's why we're funding both Catholic Community and the Human Services Council, is that they'll work out that with folks, but I believe they have an arrangement where they would actually pay for some of that. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Where are you getting the extra money from?
The money's coming from the Federal Transit Administration through grant funding called 5310. Yeah. And it comes with a match. The local match is 20% here in Clark County. The 80% comes from the federal government.
From where?
Federal government. Federal Transit Administration.
Okay.
And is that time limited or is that ongoing?
It's currently in annual cycles, but we have enough that we think that for the next, for 2015 and 16, that we have funding. I think there's a good opportunity that that will continue. There's every indication in the world that it would continue for a while. I can't say for decades, but I safe to say that at least 2 years, if maybe more.
So when you say when people are not eligible for Medicaid, there was Medicaid expansion. Is Human Service Council taking into account to that?
Medicaid transportation is the medical transportation brokerage for Medicaid. And so those rules and regulations, I have no idea about. That's something they deal with.
Okay.
The reserve override came up from the Human Services Council as a result of people that weren't qualified. Maybe they weren't qualified because they don't receive Medicaid, they received Medicare.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things that came up, I know this doesn't make any sense, but the Medicaid rules changed, and guess what? If you're going to the pharmacist to pick up the pills that the doctor prescribed, they can't take you there because that's not a doctor's appointment. You can't go to certain... There's a lot of exclusions within Medicaid transportation that don't make sense. And so that's where the reserve right comes in, the common sense approach to see if the local community can address some of those.
Well, and, I know there's supposed to have been a lot of grants that came out with the Affordable Health Care Act. Do you know any related to transportation?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Maybe
there's an indirect connection to this, but I'm not aware of it.
I was thinking about you Sunday. I don't know if you saw it, but there was an article in Columbia entitled Ford Motor Company is Experimenting with its Own Uber-like App.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And a vehicle to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be glad to share this article with you. But
great.
They're working on an app similar to what the Uber mm-hmm. drivers use. But also a possibility of a vehicle to go with it. It would be somewhere between a bus and a small passenger car.
Mm-hmm.
And I did think about C-Van. Mm-hmm. Some of your vans are pretty big.
Yes.
And this might be a good fit.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you're not going to get any of these before April 1st
mm-hmm.
because they're still in the thinking stage, but they're talking about it, and they seem to be fairly serious about it. It could potentially market both to municipalities or transit agencies looking to offer more nimble alternatives to the bus. Passengers would request a ride through the app in much the same way you can with Uber or Lyft. A premium minibus would show up arriving on demand, take you to your destination, maybe collecting and dropping off some other passengers along the way.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, if you can share that. Thank you. Again, I'm a bus geek right now. We're ordering 12 replacement Eldorado body on chassis vehicles. So we're going to have some new vehicles by the end of this year, believe it or not. It takes that long to, we've ordered them. And it's going to be December before we get them. But one of the things we're going to do next year as we try to expand the fleet, we're going to go with alternative fuel version. Right now, everything is clean diesel in the industry, but compressed natural gas, there's hybrid electric diesel, there's fusion. Not fusion. huh? Fuel cell. Thank you.
Hydrogen.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's, you know, we add bananas to it. Marty McFly goes on.
Looking for a vehicle.
Would any of surplus vans be available for purchase?
The way we handle surplus vehicles, we turn them over to a service. Excuse me. Over in Gresham, and they auction them off.
Okay.
And you can get them at a fairly decent price. Yeah.
Wasn't there something you were talking about where a surplus vehicle could go to an organization like the ARG?
The FTA rules say that we have to sell it at market value. Oh, okay. So it is still a possibility. But as we get closer to it, I'll investigate it further.
By the way, my son just got a job at Apple.
Oh, okay. Google's
coming out with a driverless van, and so is Apple coming out.
I don't dare mention that. We have the Amalgamated Transit Corporation. Not a big fan.
When?
Huh?
When?
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 I think Google's coming out next year.
Yeah, they have that one experiment where they drove from Palo Alto to Las Vegas for the trade show.
Yeah,
without a driver. No.
In there, ready to go.
I think technology
is scary.
In 15 years, it'll seem like we couldn't imagine living without it.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
I just have to put a plug in for Veronica because she taught Jack how to ride the bus home from school. Makes my heart happy since I work on this side of town and he's clear on the other, like calling me for rides after school, and that was never going to work. So
we're hoping that we can do more, but we are going to be recruiting for an additional travel trainer.
Oh, good.
Good. Right now we're working with the union on that, so we'll have two. Hopefully you can help more and more folks.
I'm just a little scared he's going to start going to Portland.
That's what we got to deal with all the time, those overprotective parents.
Well, he does turn 15 in a few weeks.
So with that, we're on to public sector support.
Have a couple of comments. Yeah. So at the October event that you all sponsored, you will remember that the county administrator, Mark McCauley, was part of the program, and he wants to double the number of supported employees that are in the county government by next October. So I just want you to know that we're working on it.
Great.
And he's still very serious about it, and so we he made some contact with an organization, and they're kind of gave him the blessing to be off and running with it. So.
So what do they what do they have now currently?
We're down to four people, and then one person who isn't supported. So I'd be happy if he just did eight. You know. If we got it to eight, that would be delightful. Mm-hmm. Because both the city and the county have lost folks over time. Yamas, however, has hired somebody, and I know there is a young man who is trying to get on at Yamas.
And I talked to him. He's not doing any more hiring right now.
Yeah, well, Yamas is a small city, you know. Mm-hmm. Not as small as Ridgefield, but...
Yeah. They have a grocery store at Canvas, don't they?
Mm-hmm. We
paper mill.
Anyway, so I just wanted you to know that that issue, we'll probably give you updates on as time goes on, because it's anxiety-provoking right now to the county administrator. So, if you do have a placement at the county, I don't know if you do, David, but if you do have a, check it out and make sure everything's good. I don't know who's supporting who then right now. All right.
I think I'm next. I just wanted to let you all know that we released the request for qualifications today. For adult employment and day program services, and so that included adult employment. We're hopefully going to be able to qualify one or more adult employment agencies, and also we have training and technical assistance as well that we have out for proposals. So hopefully we'll get some proposals back. They're due back on March 27th at 4:30 p.m., no later than 4:30 p.m. It's posted on our website, on the front page of our website, and an ad went out in the Reflector today. So previously I'd asked about interest in board members being on the review committee, and I had an overwhelming response, but I need to winnow it down to maybe two or three people. Three people would be great. And we'd be looking at doing the review probably the week of the 6th of April.
So, the beach. Spring break.
Is it spring break?
Yes.
Well, we could do it the week after then. The week of the 13th. It's flexible. So if that's spring break, then yeah, we will do it on spring break for those of you that.
I'll volunteer.
Okay. So I saw Mary D, Leanne.
Oh, you were kidding when you said a bunch of people.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm okay. How many hours are you talking and when?
Well, it depends on the number of responses that we get. And it usually will send out, the process usually works that we'll send the applications out to the review committee, and you can review those.
We don't get together and do it.
We do get together, we'll send them out to you in advance so you can review them at your on your own schedule, and then we'll get together at the end for a meeting.
I can do it.
Okay. Anybody else?
I'm still on that entire week.
Del? Okay. Great. And that will be great. Meredy, Leanne, Trista, Del. Okay. Thank you so much.
The next item is a school district letter. I left it on there because you had us write a letter to Hawkinson School District, which Leanne got it out. We got it out together, and then I got an immediate call. Did you make a call?
No.
Oh well, I got a call, and they were concerned that we had written a letter, and. So I just let them know that, you know, they told me, and they assured me that students with disabilities would not be in an inadequate building, that they would not, certainly, they were thinking about it for the 18 to 21-year-olds, doing something, but it wouldn't be, so I encouraged them to have employment experience, perhaps, instead, in their community. And that's kind of how we left it before I left the country. They never sent me anything back or anything like that, but we did send it to all the school board members. So.
And who called you?
No.
This lady is Lori Lemieux.
Yes.
She's the executive assistant office manager for Hawkinson School District.
I think that's who I talked to.
She says in here, I spoke with Mary Strudel yesterday.
Oh, you did get something. Okay.
Yeah. I got this letter in response to her letter.
Okay.
Then you can report on
that. What that was about.
No, I'm so glad. Yes.
I thought I was throwing you under the bus.
No. No, Walt would run me over.
But I'd advocate for you.
So they just say in the letter they want to clarify that they say we do not separate our special education students, nor was it our intention to house them in the middle school. When and if the current middle school is repurposed, we will carefully consider how to use it. So but we wrote the letter responding to the information in the article and Kay's very eloquently worded response. So it's on public record.
We're on record.
Mm-hmm. Yes. They know we're watching them.
Thank you.
Here's your stuff.
Oh, I'll put it in that one.
Yeah. Okay, I'll make it short and sweet, guys. Did everybody get their smiles? Okay. So, pretty much where we're at, Wednesday the 11th is cut off. It has to be out of
Committee of Origin.
Committee of Origin. House of Origin.
House of Origin.
House of Origin.
Yes, House of Origin.
Yeah. March. Yeah. March 11th. And so where we are at right now, and mine is actually a little newer than yours. So the Senate budget will come out first this year. I was actually wrong. I was thinking the House did, but the Senate budget comes out first. We've heard about a week or two before it comes out. The House is going to be fairly ready to come out shortly after that. So if you look down, House Bill 1240, which is the restraints bill, has passed and has gone to the floor for a second reading, has gone to the floor for motion. You go down and House Bill 1636, employment for people with disabilities, that is gone onto the floor for, they were supposed to be on the floor today. That's on the floor for a vote. We were up there. They were not on the floor. They were caucusing the whole time we were up there, but I actually have amendments that have taken place since 4 o'clock. So, you know, it's like things change quick. The Parent for Parent program, which they did change the name of, has passed. It's basically like Parent to Parent, only it's for families in foster care. We did request that they make a change to the name. A Senate Bill 5243, which is the RHC bill that Honeyford put forward to keep Yakima Valley open, is the one that just had an amendment added to it. It's actually had two amendments since I left up there this afternoon. And so the second substitute, it says, so if you remember right, a couple years ago we put a requirement on Yakima Valley that no new admissions could go into that institution. They would only use it for respite when the current number of individuals living in that institution got down to 16, it would close, right? Senator Honeyford, who's from that district and is very concerned about jobs, continues to run this bill to keep it open to open new admissions. Now, I will tell you that's very frustrating to me, because when we have families, and I have three right now who need a crisis stabilization, and Yakima refuses to take them because they say they're not set up to handle that level of need. So that's just Darla's own editorial gift to you. Sorry. Okay, so the second substitute reads, requires the Yakima Valley School to operate crisis stabilization beds and respite service beds at the capacity that the school allows as the need of the community requires, prohibits the census of permanent residents in the Residential Habilitation Center from exceeding the number of permanent residents in the place as of the effective date of this act, which means they can't add any more, but it also means that it's not going to lower any from where we're currently at. Requires the Department of Social and Health Services to continue to provide respite services in the residential habilitation centers and develop residential care in the community with the goal of allowing clients to access services where they choose. So there's a few things in there that's okay. There's a few things in there that's not okay. We spent the day trying to get the bill killed. As far as I know, they've put these substitutes on it, but I don't know if it's passed the floor yet.
That's the Senate bill?
That's the Senate bill.
Because the House will probably support that.
So I was highly encouraging them to go ahead and stick with the downsizing in Yakima Valley and access that space and those newly freed emptied beds for mental health beds, which our state so desperately needs as the lawsuit with the mental health services, therefore keeping the jobs in Yakima, freeing people with developmental disabilities to go to their own communities, and allowing people with mental health issues to get their needs met. They haven't listened to me. The Silver Act bill has passed and has gone to the floor, and then the Washington State Trust Fund, which really doesn't do, it just makes some little tweaks to it. It's not really good or bad. It's passed and it's gone on to, it's on the floor for a vote, and they're, I don't know if they're on the floor. They said they were going to work all weekend. So we're about not quite halfway through session. We have 4 advocacy days left. The 11th is Civil Rights Day. 318. We've got families. We've got three van loads going up on that day. The 25th is Supported Employment Day, and we would love to help supported employment vendors, help get them up there, staff and anyone that they're serving that might want to go up. And then April 1st is the Autism Day. And that's our last advocacy day up there, although session will probably continue significantly past that. There was a bill that was introduced, and I can't pronounce the senator's names, but it was Senate Bill 5718, and it was pretty much dead on arrival, but we're trying to figure out a way to bring it back from the dead, because nothing's ever truly dead in Olympia. And it's an equality and social justice bill, and it talks about a universal design for all individuals. And it's not specifically a DD bill. It's equality and justice. And it's not listed on your thing because the state ARC was not tracking it. So it's Senate Bill 5718. And it sounds like it's just an excellent bill, actually. And so we need to try to figure out how do we breathe air into it again.
So is it a architectural bill? I mean, you know, you say universal design, and you say also social justice. I'm trying to wrap my head.
So universal design, they're talking about universal design in schools and all service delivery models. So when we're talking about seniors and mental health, and right, it's how do we serve everyone? And so looking at making sure that with our programs, our equality and social justice is equal and accessible to everybody, and it specifically lies out in including individuals with developmental disabilities, because although there's a lot of social justice and equality bills out there, most of them don't include us because we're kind of a little more complicated to crawl in bed with, especially around school stuff.
Okay.
Right, because of litigation issues.
So when I think of universal design, I think of architectural
type
of things. Right. This is more than that.
Oh, yes, right? Yes. We're trying to get the schools to all go to universal design so that in any environment, not the physical, but the curriculum and all the different things, so that the kids, regardless of where they're functioning and how they're functioning, can all access the same curriculum. Core curriculum that's currently out, right? How do we access the different things and really taking that universal design that we used to talk about as far as architectural and expanding it onto services and delivery models.
Yeah.
So, and that's really kind of all that's going on right now. So, we'd love to take anybody up that wants to go. It's a fun day. Our legislators would love to see you. So,
Dennis,
when
was the last time you've been?
Yeah, you should go, Dennis. Anyway, you guys know how to get a hold of me if you want to go. Thank you.
Any new business? I just was going to announce or remind people that the WISE training series, they're doing the Value of Employment panel coming up March 17th. And that's it. Is there anything else?
Mm-hmm.
So we adjourn.
Thank you.
Very good.